In 1970, the question came up again, and Nixon appointed a personal representative. And I don't think you have to be a rocket scientist to realize the first person he appointed was Henry Cabot Lodge, who had been his vice presidential running mate in 1960 when he was defeated by John Kennedy. And after that, he had been the ambassador to South Vietnam. I don't think you have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that the real reason why Nixon wanted contact with the Pope was because of Vietnam. Now, incidentally, many in the Italian press would report on this. Nixon made a visit early in the summer of 1970 to European powers and expected to have a meeting with the Pope. And the Pope said he was on retreat. So therefore, Nixon had to come back to make an appointment with the Pope after he toured Europe. So it was after that that then he did appoint the personal representative. Then in November of 1970, I think it was, the Pope had a long meeting with Gromyko. And it was supposed to be very friendly. And the Italian press played it up the contrast with the coldness he showed towards Nixon versus the warmth he showed towards the Soviet Union. So it was part of the chink in the armor that was started under John the 23rd. At any rate, the personal representative then remained. Other presidents just kept it until the last personal representative was William Wilson, who then became the first ambassador. Now, again, there was a crisis because there had been things brewing. In the summer of 1983, the United States Congress takes the first step on anything pertaining to finances. There was an amendment to the bill for appropriations for fiscal 1984, repealing the legislation from 1867 to leave the president free, supposedly. Now, of course, nobody knew about this. One senator, a Jewish senator from Florida, had tried to do it in 1977, but it didn't work. 1983, it went through on what we call a voice vote. In other words, there's no recorded opposition. It then had to go to the Senate for approval, to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and they simply take the first name on the list and they rotate them. First name on the list was Jesse Helms from South Carolina, who was bitterly anti-Catholic. So there was no way that he was going to approve it. So then it was shifted over to Senator Lugar, who was still in the Senate from Indiana. And their official position was they find anything that ties the president's hand, and they try to release it to free up the president. Well, no, that wasn't it. In May of 1983, the United States bishops issued their pastoral letter on the challenge of peace, condemning first use of atomic weapons, saying that deterrence was tolerable only if it was leading to bilateral negotiation for disarmament. And this caused all sorts of problems and was one of the principal issues that led to the neoconservative movement in the Catholic Church in the United States. So anyway, it was clear to those of us who were watching these things, something was happening. In November of 1983, Casseroli, the Cardinal Secretary of State, paid a visit to the White House. The secular press never picked it up. Now, remember the difficulty in 1936 when Pacelli wanted to meet the president. They had to make all these arrangements, and finally it was really an unofficial visit because he met at the president's mother's house for lunch. Really, he was a guest of the president's mother, not the president, technically. Whereas in 1983, Casseroli paid this visit. The press didn't pick it up. And it wasn't even listed on the official White House program. In January, to be precise, January 10th, 1984, the Holy See announced the establishment of diplomatic relations. 6 hours later, the United States announced resumption, really, of diplomatic relations. Now, it's clear to me that there was something going on because the normal protocol is the country announces diplomatic relations and then the Holy See determines what its response will be. In this case, the Holy See announced it first because they've been working on it really from the time of the 40s. So finally, it was done. And the reason for the delay was the Secretary of State of the United States, George Shultz, was actually opposed to it. He was afraid of what it may do and so forth. The conservative Protestants were all opposed, but President Reagan had his chief of staff get the famous evangelical minister, Billy Graham, to go around and visit the evangelicals saying, you may protest, but quietly because the president wants it. And one of the reasons was he thought he could rein him in, rein in the bishops, which is not just my opinion. William Wilson became the first ambassador. So the only thing that went through the Senate then was the approval of the ambassador, not the establishment of diplomatic relations that was already done, but the approval of the ambassador. And later on, he wrote his memoirs, and when they were never published. And then he gave them to me to read over, and there were some horrendous things, and it made it clear that the motivation behind this movement was to rein in the American bishops, because he made a statement that the bishops have to learn their role in society is given them by the state. And I just made a marginal comment. I said, I'll meet with you about this later, but I said Cardinal Ratzinger would not agree, because we would go back to the investiture controversy, which, of course, the ambassador wouldn't understand. So then the other thing for the once they had decided on this, his memoirs make it clear that Secretary of State Shultz was opposed. So that was the reason for this long delay. And finally, the last apostolic delegate to the United States was Pio Laghi, and he became the first pro-nuncio originally. Now they changed the name to nuncio. The OEC invented that term in the 60s, I think it was, for nations that would not accord the dean of the diplomatic corps title to the papal representative, to the nuncio. So if there wasn't, if they weren't the dean of the diplomatic corps, then they were called pro-nuncio. But then they did away with that. The United States has a nuncio now. But anyway, it was the thing that there was constant delay, and finally Cardinal Laghi, later Cardinal Laghi, said, we just have to have the Vatican do it then, take the initiative. So it's sort of an interesting thing. It's just a dead issue now. Although there's still confusion, National Public Radio called me one time and said, well, we're going to interview you tomorrow, but why is the Catholic Church treated like a state? I said, it's not. So there's diplomatic relations. I said, yes. And the Holy See's diplomatic corps is probably the oldest in the world, the power to send and receive ambassadors. So I said, there's the only analogy in some ways is we send ambassadors to the United Nations, but there is no territory except the little territory in New York to protect the sovereignty of the United Nations. It does not send ambassadors to countries, but in the case of the Holy See, they both send and receive, and it's the Holy See, not Vatican City State, that came into being, as we have already spoken, in 1929. So people will use the Vatican. I use it too. But I'd like to correct people because too many Americans will refer to Rome.
Well, the concept of the Holy See is quite difficult to understand, no?
It is. It's very complicated. And there is the book, it's old now, by Robert Graham called Vatican Diplomacy that examines the meaning of the Holy See. The homepage for the Holy See, which of course is Vatican.va, explains the difference that it is, in popular terms, it's the Pope as the Bishop of the Diocese of Rome inserted in international affairs as the supreme head of the church, basically. So therefore he sends and receives ambassadors and did so even during the time of the Roman question.